God in Movies. Thank you. Appreciate it. You just added. Getting that right.
My name is Deidre Lanoux. I'm just on the team that sort of helps put together these growth intensives. In case you have not heard it yet, growth intensives are seminars that we offer around six times a year. And they're an opportunity to just take one topic and dive deep for an hour or two. Into a topic, and we're so grateful that Don took up Marv's challenge to try this topic.
That's the only reason Marv's here.
Especially in honor of the fact that the Oscars are coming up and that kind of thing, we thought that this would be cool. As with all aspects of everything that we're about, of course, but I definitely would say the Grow Ministry for sure, is that we never want this to be just about information or just about knowledge. We always want this to be about transformation, about growth. And so any topic that we address, we are always hopeful that we get into some kind of conversation about what does this mean for me and what does this mean for me as a follower of Jesus. And so we know that that's going to be a really cool application tonight with Don leading us. You have an attendance sheet on your table, and that's just for us to have a sense of who is here. You may have registered, but your name's not on the sheet. Don't worry, it's just that these sheets got printed a few days ago. But if you don't mind adding your name, if your name isn't on there, and then I'll pick up those sheets after we're done tonight. All right? Welcome, we're so glad you're here. Don has a startup for us.
Yeah, so there was a handout. Did this table get any of the handouts?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Oh, and I also, just full disclosure, we try to record these so that we can post them along with a handout for those who are not able to attend. So just to let you know, a recording is going.
I don't think you did get this.
You did not get
them? No, I'm sorry. Yeah,
there you go.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Table. All right. Ready?
Yes. All right. Well, thank you all. Welcome. As Deidre said, this growth intensive is called God in Movies. A friend of ours, The Ceilings, has introduced us to a book called Every Day, Every Moment Holy.
Every Moment
Holy. And it has a series of liturgies, basically kind of prayers to consider for many of the different things that you might do. I think Bill said there's even one for changing diapers. Fortunately, I'm no longer changing diapers, so. But there is one for a liturgy before consuming media. And it's a beautiful prayer. It's a very long prayer. So I gave you a copy of it, but I've asked Bill if he would open our growth intensive this evening reading that as our opening prayer this morning. So if you would pray with us.
Father, who alone judges all things rightly, be present in my mind and active in my imagination as I prepare to engage with the claims and questions of diverse cultures incarnated in the stories that people tell. Let me experience mediums of art and expression, neither as a passive consumer nor as an entertainment glutton, but rather as one who through such works would more fully and compassionately enter this ongoing human conversation of mystery and meaning. Wonder and beauty, good and evil, sorrow and joy, fear and love. All truth is your truth, O Lord. All beauty is your beauty. Therefore, use human expressions of celebration and longing as catalysts to draw my mind towards ever deeper insight, my imagination into new and wondering awe, and my heartbeat in a closer rhythm with your own. Shape my vision by your fixed precepts and tutor me, Holy Spirit. I might learn to discern the difference between those stories that are whole, echoing the greater narrative of your redemption, and those that are bent or broken, failing to trace accurately the patterns of your eternal thoughts, and so failing to name rightly the true condition of humanity and of all creation. Grant me wisdom to divide rightly, to separate form from content, craft from narrative, and meaning from emotion. Bless me with the great discernment to be able to celebrate the stamp of your divine image revealed in the excellence of craft and artistry, even while grieving the paucity of meaning or hope in the same work. Guard my mind against the old enticement to believe a lie simply because it's beautifully folded. Let me not be careless. Give me right conviction to judge my own motives in that which I approve, teaching me to be always mindful of that which I consume, and thoughtful of the ways in which I consume it. Impart to me keener knowledge of the limits of my own heart and light of my own particular brokenness, that I might choose that that would be for my flourishing and not for my harm. Give me grace to understand that which causes me to stumble might bear no ill consequence for another of your children, so that while I am to care for my brothers and sisters, I must allow them, in matters of conscience, the freedom to sometimes choose a thing your spirit convicts me to refrain from. Even so, let my own freedoms in Christ never be flaunted or exercised in such a way as to give cause for confusion, temptation, or stumbling in others. May the stories that I partake of and the ways in which I engage with them make me, in the end, more empathetic Christ-bearer, more compassionate, more aware of my own brokenness and need for grace, better able to understand the hopes and fears, failings of my fellow humans, so that I might more authentically live and learn and love among them unto the end that all of our many stories might be more beautifully woven into your own greater story.
So, found that I read through that after sort of developing much of this content, so I was blessed by the fact that it really mirrors much of what I hope that you get from our conversation. I did want to just mention, as Deirdre said, a couple of things. The growth intensives, our intent is that we from this grow into more conformity, to be transformed into the character of Christ, to be more like Christ. So that's the growth. Intensive, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. One, there's sort of three ways that intensive could be taken. One is the preparation of the leader, of me. So that certainly, I put some time into this, but I don't know. This topic is so vast. I could have put, 10 times the amount of effort. In fact, I talked through this with my son, and he keeps asking me, well, did you see all the movies I told you about? No, there's just so many different directions this could go. It could also be the depth of the content. This content is not sort of the kind of depth that you might find in some of our growth intensives. Our study in Romans last week, much deeper. But this is not superficial. This does touch on things that are eternal, and I think you'll see that. And then the last is the engagement of the group. And so intensive, really, part of our desire is that that you will engage with the content that we're talking about. And that's why we really hope that you will see these, register for them, give us an opportunity to visit with you about them beforehand so that you can kind of prepare. And in fact, I shared a couple of things with you kind of through the last couple of weeks so that you might be able to kind of get a little bit of a jump on our conversation. And so the homework, for those of you who did sort of get the emails about homework, was it too much, too little? Did you look at it? Did you think about it? Or did you, as my wife tells me, you know, I don't really read all your emails. Text her when I should, you know, communicate with my wife. So for you, did you read the emails? Did you find them to be engaging and interesting? So I'll ask, for those of you who got the first email, how many did you watch a movie? What movies did you watch? What are some movies
Peanut
that you watched?
Peanut Butter Falcon.
Peanut Butter Falcon. Good. Okay.
Hiding Place.
Did you watch a movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. I'm gonna abbreviate PB Falcon. The Hiding Place, and that's the new Hiding Place that just came out, right? Oh, okay.
South Pacific.
Somebody said It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah.
The Two Popes.
That was the one I got you.
Did I watch The Marriage Story?
South Pacific, The Two Popes. Marriage Story. Okay, so what... The instruction was to find a movie that you consider a good movie, or that you think is a good movie, and watch it and consider why you think it might be a good movie. So for these movies, what merit did you see in the movie? What was it that made you think that's a good movie? You enjoyed it? I mean, that's a good reason.
An interesting perspective on a world I would never encounter.
Okay. So, perspective?
Let's see. Characters that you could relate to.
Relatable characters?
Or characters you see in real life, I mean.
Yeah. Real life. So.
Or discussion initiated.
Discussion from it?
South Pacific had something of everything in it, we felt like. It had history and relationships and cross-culture, even though it was an old movie. And it was beautiful. Beautiful music, beautiful scenery.
How many of you like to go back and watch old movies that you've enjoyed? Okay, so next topic... Was a little bit of a thought provoker. Madeline Ling, I gave you a Madeline Lingle, I don't know how to say her name, quote, said, "Art that is good, true, and beautiful is Christian art, no matter what the artist believes." What did you think of that? And let me read you this from C.S. Lewis, a letter to Penelope from in 1943. He wrote, "Creation, as applied to human authorship, seems to me to be an entirely misleading term. We rearrange and recombine elements made by him and already containing his meanings."
So I don't know how exactly that ties in with art as being the same, but part of the prayer was all truth, clear truth. So it may be in there an all beauty of whatever makes it true beauty is your beauty.
Are you comfortable with that concept? So what
that
makes it...
also, though, warned against kind of being lured by things that are beautiful but are not...
Right? Right?
Proper.
Yeah.
It can be distorted. And beauty.
Uh-huh. So... is creativity, when people create something, is that creativity related to God's creativity?
Can be.
Yes.
So I would say, Romans 1 would say that there are people grasping in the dark if they are not in the Lord, and if they are, then they understand that thing in the light. So
yeah.
Yes, it has to be.
Yeah.
Either in juxtaposition as being opposed to Christ and God, or being in revelation of God and Christ.
Yeah.
I think when we call creativity, especially when we think about movies, that it seems to be at least appealing to me is it when it unfolds what God's already created. But someone when the director puts everything together, it's like, oh, there's the message.
Uh-huh.
And that is already God's creation. It's already beautiful in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it, somebody's trying to open your eyes, stop for a minute, like that peanut butter falcon. I think about the times that I see someone in a wheelchair, I don't even acknowledge him as a person. Here's a little boy with Down syndrome. It's the other guy, the other character, recognize him as a human being, a person.
Yeah.
With the same kind of desires and things that you want to accomplish in life, but that was God's creation.
And the movie can show you that.
Yeah.
Implicitly. Yeah. So the kind of the underlying question is, what do you think is meant by the term Christian art?
A good translation tour.
Okay.
It can be a branding.
Yes, and that's why I said, what do you think it means? Do you require it to be a certain, to have a certain kind of content for it to be Christian art?
I was going to say, anything that helps draw you to think about something good or excellent or praiseworthy,
mm-hmm.
that directs you to God, I don't know if I would necessarily call it Christian art and restrict it, but I would say any kind of art that helps you to believe in the beauty and the true beauty and the true
yeah.
truth, like with the capital T, that would draw you to God, that would, in a sense, have some of Christ in it, but I don't know if I'd call it Christian art.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if I differentiate between Christian art and secular art. I just call
yeah.
it art.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, I was just going to say, if we look at philosophy and what the ancients did, like Aristotle, he even said that there was an unmoved mover. So even the secular philosophers had to bow to something that had to create
right.
without being created.
Right.
And so, something that is all-encompassing, that transcends the categories.
Right. So if you think there's a Big Bang, what's behind the Big Bang?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can say that still points to Christ. They just don't know what the capital T is.
Right, right. So what I sent, the first email I sent, the first ask, included a couple of things that were sort of below the line. If you were really, really aggressive, you might have gone there. One of them was an article in from the Gospel Coalition called The Trouble with Christian Films. Did anybody read that? Interesting article. You have to register early, Bob, to get the the really good stuff.
I did. Yeah.
Okay, so yes, this is in some ways a small advertisement for commitment, right? what this article said was there are currently two primary problems with Christian films. One, they're either inherently dishonest, or they're primarily concerned with what C.S. Lewis called egoistic castle building. And the dishonesty part, they said, movies are not good carriers for complex propositional ideas. They said, if you want a complex propositional idea, go to a sermon, go to a lecture. Not this lecture, others. And they also went on to say that too often there is, in the middle of what we call Christian art, there's some sort of conversion scene where the intent of the movie is sort of focused around this. Let's get to watching someone receive Christ. Is that a bad thing? I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's kind of the intent of the movie. Is that really effective? This guy suggested that the purpose of a movie is sort of like a parable. He compared it to what C.H. Dodd wrote about parables. said, the parable is a metaphor drawn from nature or common life, arresting the hearer by its vividness or strangeness, and leaving the mind in sufficient doubt about its precise application to tease it into active thought. So a movie is really good for that purpose, right? A movie is really good for making you think. The secret to lasting and revelatory power of good works of art has everything to do with the active engagement and participation of the beholder. So we really want people that are watching to get kind of involved with it, and that's the effort. So the last question that I asked was, by what means does God demonstrate his love and communicate his thoughts? So we have the verse in Scripture, but God shows his love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, right? And in the New International Version, it says God demonstrates his love. So we know that God is demonstrative. He certainly demonstrates his love through Christ. And so my question to you is, do you think God continues to demonstrate his love in other ways to you?
Yes.
What ways? What are some of the ways that God demonstrates his love to you?
I think we talked about this at dinner. Those ones we got, right? Okay. Yeah. For the last 9 months, we've been praying for our granddaughter, Lucy, who was diagnosed with Turner Syndrome, and that could be pretty broad, right? And she was born on the 20th, and she looked pretty darn perfect to us. And you know, we could say, well, maybe doctors might misdiagnose that thing. But I truly believe it was an answered prayer. So I think God showed his love to her parents and what have you, and to us, that he gave us such a little joy.
Yeah, so obviously God demonstrates his love through answered prayers, right? Mm-hmm. What else? What about a sunrise or a sunset?
His creation.
Yeah, obviously in nature, and I think Romans 1 talks about that, right? The fact that we see evidence of God. Anything else?
Music.
Relationships with other people, yeah. Music, right? So my suggestion is God is not limited in the ways that he can communicate with us, right? He has the ability to use lots of different resources to communicate to us. Why does he communicate to us? Because he loves us. And he wants to involve us. He wants to involve us in his kingdom activities, right? So that's just a little review of the homework exercises. I did want to mention that I did have three sort of resources that I specifically tried to go through to prepare for this. One is a book by Andrew Peterson called Adorning the Dark. Really good. It's not specifically about movies. It's more just about the creation of art, artists. One is a book by Jeffrey Overstreet called Through a Screen Darkly. He is a movie critic and a believer, and this book, fabulous book. If you are interested in this topic, go get this book and read through it. It will bless you. And then last book is Real Spirituality by a guy named Robert Johnston. It reads a little bit more like a textbook, but really good detail about the art of filmmaking, how films are put together. So God and movies, our topic. So the first thing that I think of when I think of God and movies is not George Burns. But he played God. Right? This film, in my mind, is very notorious because I guess I was in high school when this came out. John Denver played the other part. Everything about this would have been a movie that I would go see. But I refused to go see it because, to me, I didn't want... This was the way I built this. I didn't want to ever be praying and see George Burns. I still haven't seen it.
How about Morgan Freeman?
Yeah. We'll get there. Alanis Morissette. Also, not God. But how many of you know that she played God? Yes, in the movie Dogma, which, aside from foul language and a lot of other things, you might enjoy. It is a challenging movie, but it's an interesting movie. It's one of those movies that makes you think. And then Charlton Heston, also not God, although he kind of looks the part there, doesn't he? Right? I don't even remember what this movie's from, but it's one of the movies that... it's what? It is not the Ten Commandments. It's another movie. Because who did he play in the Ten Commandments?
Moses.
Yes. So Val Kilmer in The Prince of Egypt did play both Moses and God, but he only voiced God. He didn't, and of course that was animated, so you didn't really see his dominion. But we should talk about who God is before we sort of go into the various people that the various ways that people see him, right? So you each have your own sort of framework. So I kind of built my own sort of framework, understanding of the character of God. This is a shorthand version of sort of the character of God, right? So God is good, God is love, God loves you, God is gracious, and God's grace is for you, right? So this is God's relationship with us. And then God's grace extends through you. God's grace is a gift. His gifts are for you. His gifts are for you to use to build his kingdom, right? So that's sort of a review of who God is, at least, again, my sort of framework. And you have your own sort of framework of how you understand God. And we, as we relate to God, as God relates to us, we use that framework to kind of frame our understanding, right? And so we do have, yes, Morgan Freeman. So this will be our first clip. Nope, I have to go back. Let's see if I can make this work. From Bruce Almighty, probably a famous one.
Entry was a little disturbing.
So if you didn't notice that there were little
the gloves are
those
off,
files.
God. God has taken my bird and my bush. God is a mean kid with a magnifying glass. Smite me, almighty smiter. Now, I'm not much for blaspheming, but that last one made me laugh.
You spy? Who are you?
I'm the one. Creator of the heavens and the earth. Alpha and Omega.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Bruce? I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee! Is that your final answer? Our survey says God! Bing, ding, 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 ding. Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse. Oh, and by the way, you suck! You know what would have been a little bit more impressive, though? If you hadn't used the cheesy file cabinet illusion. Anybody with a brainstem can tell that that drawer is being fed through the wall from the other side. All you have to do is find the crease right around here. There is a seam here. Or a hollow spot.
Where? Through the drywall and concrete?
Hey, that is a good one. That is a good one. Okay, how many fingers am I holding up?
Now, Bruce, thou shalt not tempt the Lord.
Hey, if you can't do it, man, that's cool.
3, 2, 4, 9, 6, 8, 1.
Okay. How many now?
7.
Aha!
Oh, you've been doing a lot of complaining about me, Bruce. Quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
Wait. Don't come near me. Seriously, when I'm backed into a corner like a wild animal, I don't want to hurt you, but I will out of instinct.
You haven't won a fight since grade 5, and that was against a girl.
Yeah, she was huge. She could come back.
And the sun was in your eyes. Oh, there you go. In a way, I brought you here to offer you a job.
Job? What job?
My job. You think you can do it better, so here's your chance. When you leave this building, you will be endowed with all my powers.
So, Bruce Almighty, God, as Morgan Freeman. So what part of that did you see that you felt like matched your image of God?
The deep voice.
Oh, the deep voice, good, yes. Yeah, see, I didn't mind watching that movie. I'm okay with Brandon Morgan Freeman, I guess.
A sense of humor.
A sense of humor, yeah.
I like how he was not provoked.
Yeah. He was not provoked, right?
He's all-knowing.
Definitely all-knowing. He had a file cabinet. Did you? The more I see that scene, the more I try to read the different titles on the files.
Well, I was impressed that he actually used the biblical name of Alpha and Omega, uh-huh. because generally when you watch movies about God, it's like totally off.
You know, I don't know that would always be true. I think there is usually enough sort of sprinkled in kind of match up a little bit. Anything that you saw in that clip that didn't align with what you understand?
The purity of the white, the scene, right?
Yeah.
Everything all white. I mean, if you look in the background, even the ladder is all white back there and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Before this scene, God is changing the light bulb on the ladder. So, what is a movie?
I don't picture God as frivolous. I mm-hmm. picture him as gracious enough to use whatever means it teaches, but still requiring awe because of who he is. So mm-hmm. in that sense, it doesn't match up with how.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, what is a movie? A movie is a multidisciplinary art form that simulates experiences, communicating ideas, stories, perceptions, feelings, beauty, and atmosphere by means of recorded or programmed moving images and sounds. Just a working definition. Does that sound okay? Movies and culture. This clip is probably something that you may have seen at some point, from 2001, A Space Odyssey. No, I assume these are men in monkey suits at this point in time. Thank you. how many of you seen that movie, seen that clip? So what do you think the intent of that scene is? What are they trying to say?
Bridging a gap between, like, primitive, like, you know, man and sort of advanced, you know, mm-hmm. man of the future.
Yeah. When was this movie made, do you know? 1968, released in 1968. What else was happening about that time?
Moon landing,
Vietnam.
We were landing on the moon. And Vietnam. Yeah. So, what was this character in the movie doing? What happened in that scene?
He was inventing a tool.
He was inventing a tool, yeah. Right. He was learning to use found objects for other purposes, right? At this, that's not over. Let's see. Movies are an expression of the culture which produces them. Movies represent culture. Is that consistent with your understanding? Movies, what happens on screen is oftentimes related to what is happening around us, right?
Here's what I found.
Oh, shush. Movies lead culture by introducing new ideas and values. Movies make culture. You think that's true?
So, somewhat.
They also challenge.
Yeah, also challenge culture. That's right. Yeah. So movies oftentimes challenge the pervasive culture in order to move culture, right? In order to change things. In fact, I came across a coursework online for documentarians that was suggesting that you could really use this tool as a way to challenge culture, as a way to move culture in the direction that you as a social activist might want to take culture. So both of these things can be true, right, about movies. One of the unique aspects of movies is that they are very fluid, very flexible. They can be very progressive. They can be very regressive, right, in different ways. God in the movies. So, or God and movies. I'm not much for the movies, so I try to drop the out of this. This is C.S. Lewis quote, another C.S. Lewis quote. Story does what no theorem can quite do. It may not be like real life in the superficial sense, but it sets before us an image of what reality may well be like at some more central region. So, sometimes the ideas are hard to get at, and a story which encapsulates those ideas is easier to understand. Who else do you know that used that technique? Yeah, Jesus was a storyteller. The Bible is basically a book of stories that really happened, and then Jesus came and he uses a lot of parables of stories to encapsulate ideas. A vaccine for smallpox can be carried through the blood of an overcomer, right? You've probably all been vaccinated for smallpox, right? Why do you get a vaccination? How does the vaccination work?
Makes
the body's immune system come alive, right? So a pattern emerges. God responds to evil not by obliterating it, but by making evil itself serve a higher good. What do you think of that?
That's very redemptive and can be restorative as well.
So that's from Paul Brand and Philip Yancey, Fearfully and Wonderfully, a book that if you haven't read it, highly recommend it. Really, really good book. Do you think that is consistent with who you understand God to be?
It's consistent with what we read in the Old Testament, certainly.
Yeah.
Genesis 50:20. What you meant for evil,
I
meant for good.
Yeah. So, I'm just going to flip back and forth here. The Art of Filmmaking. Anybody recognize the movie? It's not a clip, so we're not going to play it, but... This is Avengers Endgame, and I listed just some of the schedule of different people that are involved in the movie. Director, writer, 162 people in the cast. I believe there's 98 people in the makeup department. 1,696 people in visual effects. IMDb lists 3,406 people as cast and crew for Avengers Endgame. So why do I mention that? There are a lot of people involved. A movie is a very, very complex piece of art, right? A very complex piece of art. So most of the art that we see is created by one person, right? A book is written by one person, maybe two people, and usually you don't like the books that are written by two people, right? A painting is one person. Poetry is usually one person. But a film has a lot of different people involved. Whose idea is it anyway? There's lots of information, lots of content that is embedded into a movie. Why do I say that? Why is that important to know? Oftentimes there is maybe a director who has this vision, and some movies are much smaller than that. They'll have a much smaller group of people involved. But there's almost never just one person. You know, a one-person generated movie almost never happens. There's other people involved. So movies versus God. Anybody recognize this movie? Yeah. Life of Brian, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. No, it says it on there.
Yeah. Eventually it says it on there, right? So, are movies antagonistic toward God? Are there movies that are antagonistic toward God?
Well, I think so, but I think sometimes they can be irreverent and maybe disrespectful. But I've noticed that you're using Monty Python, and they usually tend to, in my view, react to the ridiculousness in religion. So I don't see it as being like disrespectful. I see it as being appropriate, mocking the things that don't need to be, so that the true humor can go out and we can laugh at ourselves and it can be healthier.
Yeah, so this the director of this movie, Terry Gilliam, I think he grew up in church. I don't remember which. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, even when they're irreverent, they're usually exposing the sin that is in us. So even when they're mocking God, it's not because they are something that is outside of God. It's because there's sin in the understanding of how they view God, and it is becoming known on how they see
it. So he grew up in the church, and he left the church because he says that he wanted to explore humor, and he didn't feel like in the church he was allowed to do that, or at least in the church that he was in, to explore sort of the humor of religion.
But, I don't know, I was too busy throwing a pig nose. I think it was Blessed Are the Cheesemakers.
What's so special about the cheesemakers?
Well, obviously it's not meant to be taken literally. It refers to any manufacturers of dairy products. See, if you haven't been going on with the bird, that big nose. Hey, say that once more, I'll smash your bloody face in. Better keep listening. Might be a bit about Blessed Are the Big Noses. Oh, lay off him.
So, in the middle of Blessed Are the Peacemakers, they're about to have a fight. So, if movies are antagonistic towards God, if sometimes movies are antagonistic toward God, what does that mean for us? Does that make you uncomfortable when you're in, when you're watching something that is being critical of, and I'll give you two different directions, critical of Christianity or critical of God?
I'm okay with critical of Christianity, harder with critical of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the Book of Mormon, anybody seen the Book of Mormon? There's this one song in the Book of Mormon. I'm not even going to tell you what it is. If you don't know, you'll have to find somebody else. But it is a very uncomfortable song to sit there and listen to this, to their criticism of God. But you understand why they're doing it. What about digital? One of the things that I this is sort of a random slide, but I did want to mention to you that there's been changes going on in the film industry, right? And these things are really, really significant for us as believers. So digital, streaming, these are things that have democratized an industry that was always a big company run thing. So movies can be made now very easily, right? So these people made this movie. This was from a church. And the budget for this movie, anybody have a guess? $20,000. $20,000 they made Flywheel.
Hey, what are we sitting here for?
Yeah. You could gather that up. And it had an impact on people, right? Streaming. Why do I put that up there? This is a little movie, or a mini-series, I guess, or a television series called Messiah. And it's not really accurate, but it's a challenging read, and it's playing on Netflix, right? So Netflix is going to spend $17 billion on content next year. This year, $17 billion on content. That means they don't really care what they put on the screen. So whatever people will watch, they're going to put on the screen. Sometimes they're going to put things on that people won't watch, right? But they're going to try. I did want to... I want you to see this because it is Jesus today... or supposed to be in 2020. Somebody's idea of what Jesus might be like.
He's come out of nowhere, and we don't know who he is. What do we know about him? He's leading desperate people.
So this is a cult?
We don't know who he's associated with. He could be creating an army. Or he could be leading them to their death.
Sometimes this would be one of those things that would tease your mind into active thought. If you will watch it with the understanding of, hey, what is true about this? What is consistent with what I believe? What is a challenge to what I believe? What's wrong with this? But it's also a conversation starter, right? Because it is in the public media. I want to also mention documentaries. Documentaries allow Documentaries allow us to understand what's going on around us, right, in a different way. This particular one, Free Burma Rangers, is an incredible story about a guy who is Basically, he's living out his life in Burma, and now in, I think he's gone into Iraq, he's gone into Syria, and what he does, he goes into conflict zones to help people, to bring medical supplies and medical care to people who are in the, who are being oppressed within conflict zones. So he goes into Burma, where the where there's a genocide going on, where the Burmese army is trying to kill the native people, and he helps those native people, and he built an organization to protect it. And what's amazing is this movie. You're kind of on the edge of your seat watching this guy who is literally fearless and involving his family in this thing. So anyway, I'm telling you that because on February 24th and 25th, you can watch this at Fathom Events at your local movie theater. This would be a really, really good story to go see. And he is a believer, and he talks clearly about God throughout. So you can also take your friends. One of the things that is good about movies is the opportunity to have conversations about them, right? Because people experience them, and they are powerful emotion builders. Isn't it mindless entertainment? Lots and lots of words on this sheet. No pictures. So I'm just going to kind of run through this with you. I've divided it into sort of three sort of categories to address this. One is, and I actually wrote it, it's all written down there on your sheet as well, so you don't have to write it. The power of the medium. Movies engage our seeing and our hearing and our thinking simultaneously, often on multiple levels. That's one of the unique things, right? So art has always been intended to kind of capture your attention, right? And so movies do this on many levels at the same time. Movies are able to focus on various aspects of an idea or a person or an event. So they can bring your focus to certain things. So, for instance, in the Free Burma Rangers, you see this guy walking into the conflict zone with a kid on his chest because he's a dad and he's got a new kid, and he's going to help people who also have kids, and so he's like, well, they're doing it. They need help. I'm going to help them. It's a powerful thing, and it focuses the attention on some of the people that are involved in these conflicts that have that are totally innocent and have no reason to be there. And this the way this the image is stronger in this environment. Movies generate strong physical emotions that run the gamut from tears to laughter, from nausea to pride. I don't know if any of you have ever thrown up in a movie, but movies make ideas accessible, so they bring ideas to the table that we can begin to understand. The penetration of the audience. Movies are quickly deliverable to hundreds or thousands or millions of viewers. Movies can be translated into multiple languages. Current technology allows the delivery of multiple languages within a single room. Of course, we do that in our sanctuary, right, where during the worship service, somebody's translating. This is prepackaged and can be done on a global scale. Movies create a shared vernacular and a shared experience. The persistence of the content, by that I mean it stays with you, right? Years later, movies deliver content in a way that tends to linger with the viewer. Movie images and sounds can be recalled years after the initial experience. How many of you, if somebody started singing The Hills Are Alive, you would have an image immediately, right? Yeah. Yes. Movies can remind us of specific times and events and can pique our interest in history. Do you ever Google something after watching a movie? You want to find out, you know, what happened? How? Yeah, I want to know more about that. The combination of image and sound activates multiple learning styles or channels. So if you're an auditory learner or you're a, I don't know what all the different titles are, but there's different ways that you can be invested. Movies make ideas memorable. So if there's an idea in a movie, it sticks with you much longer than maybe an idea that you've come across in the newspaper.
Because if you see it, if you hear it, you write it.
Right.
So So you see it and you hear it. You get two of the three.
And you kind of feel it.
Yeah, you get that emotion of part of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So does Hollywood have an agenda? What do you think?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
What's their agenda?
Very.
Yeah. Short answer, probably, and probably there are, if there's 3,406 people working on Avengers Endgame, there may be at least 1,500 different agendas, right, in that. So how many of you saw the movie Breakthrough? This is a really long clip, and I'm going to try to... Anybody remember it?
Pictures.
Anybody see it? It's about the kid that falls through the ice. And his mom prays for him. Christine Metz, I think, plays the mom. She prays for him when he's basically dead in the hospital. And he recovers. He's underwater for a long time, under freezing water for a long time, and survives. And clearly this movie tells through prayer, right? So this movie was a Disney production. It actually was released by Disney. It was made by 20th Century Fox, but Disney, of course, acquired 20th Century Fox, released the movie. And other movies... released by Lionsgate, released by Sony Pictures, Affirm. So this image shows in the front here, the little red square is how much it cost to make the movie, and the orange square is how much the movie made at the box office. So almost every major studio is making Christian movies for this reason. Because there's an audience and they sell, yeah. There's a couple of groups of brothers that are doing this. The Irwin brothers, I think, is one made. I can only imagine. And the Kendrick brothers made the whole series from Sherwood Church. No, I can't remember the name of the church. The Alex Kendrick, he had he said that he has a prayer team that seeks guidance for movie themes and viewpoints. And that when he made The War Room, he says God led them to tell the story. You know The War Room?
Yes.
About this elderly African-American woman. Who has a place that she goes to pray, and he says God led them specifically to tell the story from the viewpoint of an elderly African-American woman praying in a closet. He said on their team, in addition to the people that are actively working on the movie, they have a prayer team that prays about crew and casting decisions. So they are very involved in that. And he is adamant about only casting Christians in roles of believers. Some fun facts for you. So, on finding God in movies, I have two short clips here. One of them is Harriet. Anybody see Harriet? And the other was Knives Out. Both really, really good movies. Radically different, right? Harriet is the story of Harriet Tubman, who is famous American, right? It's a fabulous movie. This clip...
could you turn it up a little bit?
The volume?
My mind, yeah. Without my husband and my family, I'm just a stranger in a strange land. If I'm free, they should be too. I'm gonna go get them, one by one, starting with my husband. I need a suit for him and a dress for me so I can look like a free lady. Marie, will you help me? How do you do? How do you do? Good. Confident, composed, wise enough to know not to look a strange white man in the eyes. You don't want no trouble. Trouble comes.
Anybody but Deidre see the movie? Elaine, I know. Elaine's talking. So, again, it's a really good movie, and in the movie, Harriet Tubman is shown, this is pretty much shows her life from a grown-up as she leaves, as she escapes from slavery, as she becomes a leader in the Underground Railroad, helping slaves escape, and so she is repeatedly placed in dangerous situations, trying to lead slaves through on this Underground Railroad to freedom. First to Pennsylvania, I think, and then eventually having to lead them all the way to Canada. And so this is major Hollywood production, well received. And in this movie, she repeatedly makes reference to the fact that the only way she made this journey was through her reliance on God, and this is depicted clearly that she would have these sort of almost like spells where she would experience in some way God telling her this is the way to go, not this way, this is the way to go. She would get specific guidance to go a different way. So clearly. A God evident in the movie, and because it's historical fact, you know, what can they do? They can suppress it. It doesn't have to be told that way. It doesn't have to be clearly told that way, but it is clearly told that way.
That's what stood out to me about the movie. I was impressed that it was not suppressed.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was such a major part of her worldview.
Yeah.
In her life. And it wasn't suppressed. I was impressed with the director.
Yeah, I was delighted that they did that. Yes.
I liked your comment, and maybe a point on the other side of that. And you'll have to help me with the name of the movie, but it's the true life story. Angelina Jolie produced it, but it's about the World War II veteran. Right, and she left out the redemptive, much of the redemptive value in that man's life, where he, you know, reached that point of forgiveness and sought to forgive his torturers. But she didn't dwell on that.
Right, even though, as I understood it, she had some conversation with him, and he was somehow involved before he died, with kind of the making of that movie. But
That was disappointing, actually.
Yeah, there was another one made that did show.
Yeah.
There was another one made, probably not quite as well.
Right.
So, to that end, because that movie is, because Unbroken and Harriet are both about true events, what is the continuing value, even though the redemptive aspect was left out?
I mean, a lot of people will go home and read the movie.
Yeah, or find the book. People will be interested in it. So, so again, God can still use that situation because the story was told. I think the Harriet story, it's right there in the movie, and so it's very memorable. It's interesting that I haven't seen sort of any sort of conversation about that coming out of that movie. But it's just so, it was so vivid. It was wonderful. Pizza is here.
Yes.
Is that right?
There's salad and pizza. And it's in that, there's a
little alcove?
Yeah, down there.
Just outside.
There's ice, and there's cups over here, and I'm going to go get water if anybody else wants to drink.
Okay. So if y'all would like to take a break and go get some pizza, you're welcome to do that.
It's pepperoni, meat lovers, and veggies.
Okay.
We're eating in here.
Yeah, you can bring it back in here. That's why we have tables.
Like I said, intensive, but could have spent more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought I needed to watch several different movies, but I never got to.
we're kind of
Messiah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Like I said, it makes you, because we've talked about that in our group.
It was a winner.
Right. How will you know? Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's some things that I would expect. Either pumping in the clouds, whatever. But we have built up certain images in our mind about exactly what that means.
We talked about our group. Like you said, the association, it just does.
So have you gotten the scene where the guy walks on water?
No.
But we
I think we're through five.
Yeah, I think it may be six where they go to Washington. They're on
the
way to
Washington
tonight.
Maybe. No, they haven't gone to Washington.
All these you're talking about, Tom, right?
I haven't kept up with him, but
this reminds me.
He would be really good to hear from. Do you still keep up with him at all? So he's still in Austin?
No.
Okay. Last time he went to LA. Okay. So I thought he was in Austin for a while. He came to Austin. I thought.
I thought he moved to Hollywood.
He was living in Hollywood for a while. I remember at one point. They came to Austin.
I don't remember.
I enjoyed this piece.
That's right.
Have you seen any movies?
No.
Really? Many are.
Yeah, because, like, for example, I have this problem. Whenever I watch a sci-fi movie, I'll say this is wrong, that's wrong.
I have not met his wife. Yeah, yeah. Well, they really presented the Tree of Life. He was scared. He came. His wife came.
You know, there's so many threads and vectors on this. We could talk on. I don't want to turn it into a big discussion, but wasn't it interesting?
Hey everybody, I just want to say, because Don would be too gracious to say this, but Don and Elaine bought the pizza, so if you have a little bit of cash and you can give it to this cup, then it could reimburse them a little bit. So just if you have a little bit of cash on you, that'd be great.
Yeah. the guy.
I love my
doctor. Oh, yes. Thank you.
It's chilly, right?
It's getting a little chilly.
It's not a modern.
So,
because I've always varied that.
So I do have one sort of plug. If you're interested in movies, as I said, to me one of the best movies I've seen is this Free Burma Rangers. I had a opportunity because of my son-in-law and daughter back there to see the movie ahead of time in a screening with the director, and it's a really, really good movie, and it's playing at Fathom Events theaters around the Metroplex on February 24th and 25th. But I did buy out an auditorium, and so I have some tickets. If you are interested, they're $10 a piece for Vista Ridge on February 24th at 7 o'clock. So, and we can transact money carefully in the church after this. 24th of February is a Monday.
Okay, sorry.
So, and it is a documentary, but it's really, really good. So, I will go ahead and play this next clip. This is from Knives Out. This is a little bit more challenging because this movie is a good movie, but this movie is in the category of there's no reference to God in this movie, right? There's no overt reference to God in this movie. So I'm just playing a clip for you, but if you've seen it, then you kind of have some understanding of what the movie's about. It's still playing in theaters. I think it got an Oscar nomination for something. It's just a delightful, fun movie to go see if you are looking for it.
My name is Ryan Johnson, and I wrote and directed Knives Out.
This is sort of a behind-the-scenes.
So this is a scene about 45 minutes into the movie where we first get to meet Chris Evans' character, Hugh Ransom Drysdale. He goes by Ransom. And there's Chris Evans, a rare moment of dogs not liking Chris Evans. You can't really tell here, but this is a real mansion in the middle of Massachusetts that we shot in. It was a gorgeous murder mystery mansion that we just found, and we shot inside and outside of it. This is Lakeith Stanfield and Noah Segan as the two local cops right here.
Excuse me. Sir? We're officers of the law.
And here comes Daniel Craig as the eccentric detective Benoit Blanc and Ana de Armas as Marta.
This, what's this arraignment?
Mr. Drysdale.
CSI KFC?
I'm very proud right here of the staging of this, trying to stage everybody so the dialogue scenes worked. Like with this, we come in and first meet the family in this room, doing this wide panning over shot to establish the geography of it. In the close-up of Chris, you see Daniel coming back there. We get Tony's entrance.
Hey!
And this is Frank Oz! Frank Oz, who did a little cameo for us. I'll try and go through and introduce the cast a little bit. You saw Toni Collette there, who plays a lifestyle guru. This is Michael Shannon, who plays Walt, the youngest brother. Jamie Lee Curtis, who plays Linda, the eldest sister. And Don Johnson, who will be seen here in a moment, who plays her husband. There's Don, right there. Look at all the great sweaters. And then, hanging in the background, that's Catherine Langford, and that's Ricky Lindholm.
Jacob was in that bathroom the night at the party.
And that's Jaden Martell, who plays the younger son. So an example of that three shot right there, like this shot right here, figuring out how to just get everybody comfortably in frame in a way that feels natural. This scene was one of the most fun scenes in the whole movie to shoot, just because all of these actors were together in this room. We had a couple big scenes like this where all of these amazing actors were together and they all got to play off of each other.
You want to go? Bet, Skippy, let's go.
So yeah, everyone kind of goes at each other here. I love this ridiculous little slap fight between the two of them. I mean, it's kind of silly, but that's kind of the tone of the movie. It's a murder mystery, but it kind of, you can tell, has like a sense of humor to it.
I gotta do this more often.
So, This is a little more challenging, right? Anybody see, how many people have seen the movie? Several of you have seen it? Yeah. So what did you take away from the movie? Why did you choose to go?
I like whodunits.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a fun movie. So what happens in the movie? Now, obviously, these are going to be spoilers for those of you who haven't seen it, but if you haven't seen it by now, really, are you going?
La, 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 la.
Yeah, exactly. What happens in the movie?
Patriarch is murdered.
An author who has a lot of money and has been basically supporting all of his family for years, right? And so he's murdered, and we find out that he has left everything, nothing to any of his family. He's left everything to the young nurse that is an illegal immigrant that is has been helping him for years, I guess, and who may, in fact, have been involved in killing him. So, is there any sort of, for those of you who have seen it, is there anything that sort of speaks to you about eternal redemptive values in this movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
The person who got the inheritance deserved it, and the others did not.
Or if she didn't deserve it, she was at least not undeserving of it. Yeah.
Well, I was with
okay.
Truth will out.
Truth will out. Yeah. She. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
More pure motives than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. She seemed to really care for him.
Yeah.
As an individual.
Family dynamics too. They just always tell a story about worldview and priorities, and you know what's really valuable or true.
Here was a young woman who was so good that she couldn't lie without throwing up.
And nobody could tell the country she was actually drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was smarter than they thought.
She was definitely smarter than they thought. Yeah. So there are, and I think the movie was also sort of nudging us a little bit about immigrants and our relationship response to that. So I don't think there's necessarily anything in the movie that is bad. There's not anything that is, you know, absolutely this is exalting God. But there are things that you could pull out of it. There are strings you could begin to follow if you choose, right? If the conversation was there. So, does God have an agenda? What's your level of willingness to accept God's involvement in things where he is not clearly, where the artist didn't intend it?
We were all created to bear his image.
Yeah.
Maybe some more than others.
Yeah. How many of you have seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Oh,
no.
Long time ago,
yes. Old movie. So this is the scene where the spaceships begin to communicate, right? And they communicate with music.
You've heard six quavers that pause.
She sent us four quavers, a group of five quavers, a group of four semi-quavers.
The only thing these crazies have in common are large
signals. I hope somebody's taking all this down. What are we saying to each other?
Seems they're trying to teach us a basic tonal vocabulary.
It's the first day of school, fellas.
on this conversation now.
So, you've seen the scene, right? And Steven Spielberg movie. This is just an incredible story. I am going to read this to you because it's difficult to tell it otherwise. As Steven Spielberg continued to speak with James Lipton in the Actors Studio, addressing a live audience of film students, he spoke more about his childhood. He had grown up quite happy until his parents divorced and his world split in two. In one world, his mother was a concert pianist. In the other, his father was a pioneering computer scientist. Lipton, keeping this in mind, smiled and observed that the culminating moments of Close Encounters were clearly a manifestation of Spielberg's dreams. How do the scientists communicate with the spaceship? Through music made on their computers. His mom's a concert pianist. His father's a pioneering computer scientist. I gasped. I'd never thought about that. Was the movie really about Spielberg's longing for parents' reunion? Spielberg nodded, smiling. And then I saw emotion well up inside of him, that moment of realization art can provide even decades later to the person who crafted it. You know, the filmmaker said, astonished, I would love to say that it was all conscious and that I planned that, but honestly, I had no idea until this very moment. Somehow the audience understood the gravity of what had just taken place. Laughing, they applauded for joy. Thank you so much for that observation, Spielberg added later. Thank you so much. I had no idea that's what I was trying to get at. I had no idea. Thank you. Is that an incredible story? Quote from another director, Scott Derrickson, it's strange, especially for a director, to find out that you are not the creator. You are instrumental in creating something, but even if you fancy the idea that you pulled it out of yourself, you have to acknowledge that you could not have done it alone. And then it's on to experiencing the world around us, better trained to complete the design to apprehend the mysteries of heaven and earth that are waiting there to be discovered. So I thought that was important to share. Again, God demonstrates his love for us constantly in so many ways. And so here, here's a filmmaker, not a believer, but God is still speaking to him. And in this case, years after he made the movie, through somebody who had the insight of understanding what might be going on in this movie. So again, we're not sort of trying to get at every possible answer, but we're just sort of touching on some ideas here. Typology and character. There's four types of movies in my typology. This is not like Ebert and Siskel typology. This is Don typology. So I identified, and really it has to do with our topic, God and movies. These are four types of movies relating somehow to the idea of how God exists in movies. And so the four types are the first, movies that cast God in a speaking part. And I did find a list of some 13 people who have played God one way or another. One was Ralph Richardson in the movie Time Bandits. And you can find this online, so it's not like it's a big mystery. One is Gene Hackman in Two of a Kind. God appears only as a bright yellow light emanating from a Greek gazebo. The Acid House, God was played by Maurice Reeves. I don't know anything about that movie, never even heard of it. John Huston played God in The Bible in 1966. I mentioned Alanis Morissette played God in Dogma. God here was a hippie in a beige silk dress with flowers in her hair. Almost an Angel, Charlton Heston. That was the Charlton Heston image. Almost an Angel. God was Stern. Bruce Almighty, Morgan Freeman played God. George Plimpton played God in Religion, Inc. Groucho Marx. Anybody see Skidoo? Groucho Marx played God as a lethargic, apparently acid tripping god. Val Kilmer played the voice of God in The Prince of Egypt. George Burns, O God. Graham Chapman in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Apparently, it was a black and white photograph cut out. This one is very disturbing. Rob Zombie, anybody know who Rob Zombie is? Played God in the movie Super. His fingers are seen as purplish tentacles with blades at the tips to open up your mind. So that's one kind of movie. Movies that cast God in a speaking part. Is that, what do you think the director is doing when they cast God in a speaking part? Why do they do that?
Speak of authority.
Speak from authority, yeah. Be silly. Yeah. Yeah. Another kind is movies that focus on God's presence and work in the world. That's what we would typically define as Christian movies. A lot of times, those are those movies like Flywheel, or Fireproof, War Room. Those are very focusing on God's work. The Ten Commandments. Then another is movies that explore or lean into the mystery and transcendence of God. And that, The Tree of Life by Terrence Malick, is probably one of the primary ones of those that you've heard of. There's another one called Into Great Silence. If you've, it's about a monastery in Spain, and it's a monastery where the monks don't talk. I think the filmmaker got them to talk a little bit, but mostly the movie is silent. And then there's a movie called Andrei Rublev, which is by this Russian director, Andrei Tarkovsky. And it's this, as I understand it, it's a long movie with lots of violence, and it's kind of a journey movie. And at the end, you sort of get to the point where of transcendence. Those are three movies that lean into the mystery and transcendence of God. So it's very easy for us, in these movies that cast God in a speaking part, we sort of see God, right? These people are trying to give you the sort of the essence, or they're trying to make you think beyond what is evident to us, and take you into sort of this transcendent nature of God. Because God, we believe, obviously, God is more than just what we could see in an individual speaking part, right? And then, of course, this is where most of the movies lie, right? Movies in which the primary story has no specific reference to God. There's not any sort of... God doesn't exist as a part of the movie. Now, Knives Out would be a great example of that. Lots and lots of movies fall in that category. This is a small category. This is a fairly small category. This is a really, really small category. And this is where most movies lie, right? So I wanted to sort of... think about how you could think about, especially these movies, but to me, there's sort of this idea that there are movies that are a different way of sort of characterizing movies is to imagine the complexity of the movie, the complexity of the ideas that they're trying to encounter, and then the artistry of a movie, the way that they've put the movie together, how good the movie is. So, as an example, some of the movies that you've listed here, It's a Wonderful Life. Complex ideas? Not really. Artistry? Yeah. Pretty well put together. Yeah. So it might sort of follow in this part of the graph. Peanut Butter Falcon. Complex ideas?
No. In the middle of the road.
Yeah, maybe in here. Yeah. And artistry.
I love the simplicity of the artistry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well-made movie, right? So different people have different ways of relating to that, right? Like the Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick film, really, really complex ideas, really, really well-made. So it's kind of up here. And it's a great movie. But it's sort of beyond our sort of willing to go there sometimes, right? You have to sort of be willing to spend some time with it in order to get something out of it. Two trees. And which is more beautiful? Who made both of them? So there's a, I guess, you know, and sometimes you just say there's a time and a place, right? There's a place where this is the tree that you want to see, and there's a place where this is the tree you want to see. There's a place where this one is going to be meets your needs, meets your desires, or this one you gain more from this one. There's a value from both. So what is beautiful? What does beauty mean to you? What has to be there for something to be beautiful? How do you define beauty? How many have seen Amadeus? This is Salieri recounting, I think, one of his early experiences with.
On the page, it looked nothing. The beginning simple, almost comic. Just a pulse, bassoons, basset horns. Like a rusty squeeze box. And then, suddenly, high above it, an oboe. A single note hanging there, unwavering. Until a clarinet took it over. Sweetened it into a phrase of such delight. This was no composition by a performing monkey. This was a music I'd never heard. Filled with such longing, such unfulfillable longing. It seemed to me that I was hearing the voice of God. Give me.
So, one of the things that movie talks about a lot about is this idea of beauty and what makes beauty. And one of the principal problems in this movie in Amadeus is the fact that Salieri has desires to make music that is beautiful, and Mozart makes music that's beautiful. Mozart does it easily, right? Mozart does it flippantly. Mozart does it behind his back. And Salieri can't do it. He can't accomplish what Mozart has accomplished in his youth frivolously, right? And in Salieri's mind, it's because God has given Mozart this creative genius. He didn't give it to Salieri, and Salieri says, you know, I gave you everything, God. I gave you my life, and you didn't respond that to me. So why do I mention that? Again, creativity. Where do you land on creativity? Does it come from God? Does it come from the individual? What's the and why does God visit some people with different levels of creativity, or does he? Yeah.
And I think there's variables in all of that, right? It's whether we recognize it, whether we want to develop it, whether we're in an environment that helps us develop it. I mean, and I do also think that God, you know, grants gifts and special skills, but I don't think one answer
tells
me why you do something or don't do something.
Yeah. complexity. Right? So if we think of this scale, artistry and complexity, and as a two-dimensional graph, I want to introduce a third dimension on that graph, and that is, I'm going to use the word perception. But what I mean by it, by perception, is the Godwardness of what is done. Is that, that's not a term, that's not a real word. But
should be.
But as we begin to think in a Godward direction with the things that we do, then we're occupying that volume that is bigger than just artistry and complexity. And I mentioned The Tree of Life, and that is a movie that is made to occupy that volume. It's a movie that intends in every way to talk about God in ways, and to make you think about God, not trying to be specific in words, but to sort of go beyond words in making you think about God. And this is the final scene of the movie. The movie, The Tree of Life, it's got Brad Pitt, Sean Penn, Jessica Chastain are the main characters in it, and they live kind of in Texas, I think it's the 50s, 60s kind of time frame, and kind of some tough things happen in their life, and at the end of the movie, this is just kind of an example from the movie, this is the family sort of regathering at the end of the movie on this beach, and all these other families are sort of regathering, and brothers dies when he's very young, so this is sort of a regathering of the family, and they're experiencing the emotion of meeting up again. So, and I guess what I want you to understand is that movies that occupy this Godward volume out here, that are really well made and really artistic and really aware of God, can sometimes be kind of difficult to watch. This is difficult to really understand what's going on, and it may take more than one viewing, right? It may take, if you're going to sort of get into what the artist is trying to say, it may be more than just being there. So, yeah, gotta wrap up. Choosing movies. Professor Dumbledore would say, "Dark and difficult times lie ahead, Harry. Now is the time that we must choose between what is right and what is easy." So a number of sort of ideas on choosing. Genre, obviously the type of movie is something that is critical. My son tells me that, you know, if you want to see movies that are really sort of thinking about what could be, there'll be science fiction movies, there will be horror movies, because those sort of have the opportunity to kind of explore something beyond what we understand. Doesn't mean you choose them, but that's on rating systems. Where do you land on rating systems? Some of the movies that will explore ideas and will sort of push the boundaries of ideas may not be PG-13 movies. That's something you kind of have to think about. On language, and here, I could say, you know, bad language, or I could say a foreign language. You know, a lot of times there are people throughout the world that are exploring these kind of ideas, and ideas sometimes require you to read the subtitles. on messages, do you go to a movie when you know what the message is, or do you go to a movie to explore what the message is? Sometimes it's important to us to really understand what the message is going to be before we see it. Is that true? On enjoyment, do you pick movies that you enjoy, or do you pick movies that are going to challenge you? Do you, and then things that are above, whatsoever things are of good report. I started typing this list, and that just thing, like, it just like popped into my mind, because my mom used to say that all the time. Whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, Philippians 4:8, you know, that's a selection factor. And on faith, ultimately, if you're open to being challenged, you may end up exploring things that you might not easily accept. Is that a fair statement? Paul says we walk by faith, not by sight. Right? So how do you decide that a movie is right for you to see?
For me, it's, and I get this wrong a lot, but for me, it's about the intent of the movie. I try to somehow understand its intent going into it.
Yeah.
I use two variables. One, I always ask someone, what's it about? And then secondly, am I in the mood to take in that kind of a movie? If it's too heavy, that night I might not do that. I need a comedy of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, hey, let's watch that. I know it's a heavy topic, but let's get into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certain genres that I just will not watch.
Right. Right. So, this is, I really want to watch this clip, but this is from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh yeah, a great movie.
Yes. I'm going to have to skip a couple of these clips to get you out here. Seeing movies. Are you aware of all the ways that content is being delivered? So once you've chosen a movie, you go to it, you're watching it, be aware that there is a ton of content in the movie, right? So as you watch the movie, that's the information is coming to you in lots of different ways. There's lots of different packets of information that are being delivered to you. So if you're not sort of cognizant of that fact, things may come to you without your knowledge. Is that a fair statement? What are you looking at? What are you listening to? What's occupying your mind? I have to play this clip because this is the movie Dune. A good friend of ours, John Leneux, Deirdre's husband, says that this is the most Christian film ever produced.
That's hilarious.
And if you go on the internet and Google Dune, I've never seen the movie, but if you go on the internet and Google Dune, you will see a great deal of conversation about the theology and the sort of the underlying symbolism of Dune. I think you'd really have to have John explain that to you.
I've never once made it through that movie.
No, I get it.
And I'm just going to play a part of this clip. A Dune watching party with John at some point.
Deirdre's busy that night. That's
right. But I guess the point is this is a good example of a science fiction film that is able to explore ideas beyond what real life kind of movies would explore. And so John can see in this movie, when he watches it, he can see deep meaning and deep redemptive value about that sort of parallels what we understand to be true in the Bible. Lots of times, movies will have some event in them that is sort of Christ-like. Somebody lays down their life for somebody else. Sacrifice is a really, really big topic that's explored in movies, right? So, thinking about movies. This is a movie called Wings of Desire. I do want to just play again this little clip. This is actually in English, so it's a German movie. This guy's an angel, and that's Peter Falk.
I can't see you, but I know you're here. I feel it. Since I got here, I wish I could see your face. Just look into your eyes and tell you how good it is to be here. Just to touch something. See, that's cold. I feel good. The smoke. Have coffee. And if you do it together, it's fantastic. Or to draw. You know, you take a pencil and you make a dark line. Then you make a light line. And together it's a good line. But when your hands are cold, you're rubbing together. See, that's good. That feels good. There's so many good things. But you're not here. I'm here. I wish you were here. I wish you could talk to me. Because I'm a friend. Compañero.
So this whole movie kind of explores the verse in 1 Peter 1:12 that says, it was revealed to them, talking about what the prophets knew about Jesus, it was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves but you. In these things which now have been announced to you through those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look. And so there's this idea that these angels really would like to understand our lives, what our experience really feels like. Yes, it's. I think The City of Angels was actually an American remake of this original German movie. I'm not positive, but that's my. It's not the same, but sort of the same concept. Some suggestions about thinking about movies. So, if you go see a movie, you want to talk about it. One of the things that you might do is give it some time. Let the film rest or settle because art works slowly. Examine the themes for resonance. test implicit propositions against known truth. The movie is going to try to tell you something, but it's not going to do it explicitly, typically. It'll do it implicitly. And so kind of understand what those things are trying to say, and then, again, consider a second or third viewing, especially for those deeper, more complex movies. And lastly...
do Hallmark movies fall into that category?
No. They do, Bob. They do, Bob.
Thank you.
They're in the Godward category. Let's see if I can find my cursor here one more time. Talking about movies. I'm just going to play with... I have three clips from The Big Kahuna. The Big Kahuna is a movie that my son told me I should see. I have not seen it. It's not a movie that I would typically choose to see, but it's sort of a long... It's a play that's made into a movie, and it's a sales... Best I can tell, it's about a sales trip where Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito take a new salesman along with them to make a sales call. And the new salesman... anybody seen it, Steve?
It sounds very familiar. Yeah,
yeah.
It's been a long time.
Apparently, the new recruit gets a conversation with this guy that they're really trying to sell lubricants to, and he talks to him about Jesus. And Kevin Spacey has a real problem with this because he feels like this guy has not been honest with him in the conversation, that he has manipulated the conversation in order to steer it towards this conversation about Jesus. I'm just going to play this one short clip.
You too.
There may be a better word in this.
Man, Bob. I believe that. Somewhere down deep inside of you is something that strives to be honest. The question that you have to ask yourself is, has it touched the whole of my life? What does that mean? That means that you preaching Jesus is no different than Larry or anybody else preaching lubricants. It doesn't matter whether you're selling Jesus or Buddha or civil rights or how to make money in real estate with no money down. That doesn't make you a human being. It makes you a marketing rep. If you want to talk to somebody honestly, as a human being, ask him about his kids. Mm-hmm. Find out what his dreams are. Just to find out, for no other reason. Because as soon as you lay your hands on a conversation to steer it, it's not a conversation. It's a pitch. And you're not a human being. You're a marketing rep.
I'm going to close with that. Basically, this is sort of like life, right? Talking about movies, begin with a question. Isn't that kind of how we say we should do relationships anyway? Begin with a question. Don't rush to criticize. Wow, that's sort of life again, right? Let the conversation move. That's what Danny DeVito was saying. Don't try to hijack a conversation to make it do what you want it to do. Let the conversation move where it's moving. Trust God to take it where God wants it to go. Explore what was left unspoken or below the surface. We talked a little bit about that in our cultural intelligence intensive this morning. The fact that so much of what forms who we are is below the surface of what we can see, right? In a movie, that's absolutely true. There's lots of things that happen in a movie. Reading through this book, Through a Screen Darkly, I found this he talked about some movie, and he said that in this one scene, the camera sort of pans over, and it looks at this hallway. And he said, you know, was that intended to be just, was that just a throwaway? He found in that a meaning of there was emptiness that was associated with the decision that was just made that was part of the scene, and then they panned over and they see this empty hallway. So he's finding extreme depths of meaning by thinking about what's actually shown in the film. give grace to the artist. That's probably always good in any conversation that we have, but especially with people that we're getting to know, right? And resist oversimplification, allow for complexity. These are sort of good advice about any conversation we have. This is advice about talking about movies, but it's advice about talking with somebody, right? We skipped a couple of clips, but they're not critical to the topic. I appreciate you coming and listening. I can sort of open for questions if anybody has questions, but I think we've probably had a good conversation. I don't know.
Well, thanks for all the preparation. That was
So, my one question for you then is that what you expected when you signed up for an intensive on God in movies?
That's what I
hoped
for.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Because I wasn't sure what to expect. I asked Mark, what is it you want me to do? All right. Well, thank you very much. Let me close this in prayer, and then we'll go. Dear Heavenly Father, we do thank you that you love us and that you show us your love in so many different ways. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the intersection of you and film. Thank you for the opportunity to explore a little bit about the ways that you have used media to reach out to us, to reach out to the filmmakers. We ask that you would open our eyes. We ask that you would open our minds, Lord, to engage with you. Give us the will to set aside some things and not pursue them, but to really look into those things that are of value. Help us to take to heart the words of this liturgy that we explored at the first of this session, and use that those sort of thoughts as we structure our lives around you. It's in your Son's name that we pray. Amen. Amen.
It's unusual. Some people call it
I have heard about
Christoph Kieslowski.
Yeah, he talks a lot about Christoph
Kieslowski. He's actually a total of the Holy absolute favorite travel story, which is the first one. And Malick